Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
Welcome to Radio Sci-Fi, your podcast for science fiction old-time radio. You're cleared for takeoff. Hello, this is Clyde J. Gale with a brief reminder. Mystery Play Internet Radio is listener-supported, so I encourage your monetary support with a donation today. Please visit www.mpir-otr.com and click on the donations page. A one-time donation of any amount will be greatly appreciated. Again, that's www.mpir-otr.com. And thank you for listening to Mystery Play Internet Radio.
There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Morning, Mr. Bemis.
Oh, hello, Cheryl.
How are you today?
Fine, just fine. You're on time, I see.
I was getting worried.
Were you?
I thought you'd be here already.
Well, normally I would be before Mr. Carsville notices. Had a bit of a delay, though.
What happened?
Well, I decided to stop by the library on the way. A few books, you know, to return. But they've changed the hours.
They have?
Yes. Do you believe it? Opening later, closing early. It's getting harder and harder to check out a book. Scarcely any time at all.
Well, don't they have a slot or something for returns?
Oh, they do. But what if you're interested, let's say, in scanning the morning paper without having to purchase a copy? Or a student trying to finish a last-minute assignment? And those who work during business hours, who won't be able to use the library now? The right to read is slipping away, and no one seems to care.
Oh, here he comes. Get ready.
Well, as ready as I'll ever be.
Morning, Mr. Carsville.
Morning, Miss Anderson. Bemis.
Good morning, sir.
Glad you decided to join us.
Better late than never, I always say.
7 minutes to go. Let's open the bank on time today, shall we?
Yes, sir.
Scrooge.
What?
The boss in A Christmas Carol? Doesn't Mr. Carsville remind you the least bit of Ebenezer Scrooge?
Well, I don't think I've read it.
Really? Well, you should. All of Dickens' Christmas stories, as a matter of fact. They serve as a fine introduction to his novels. Nicholas Nickleby, Oliver Twist.
Time to open the front door, Mr. Bemis. They're lining up out front.
Oh, yes, of course.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Thanks, Cheryl. You've been very helpful.
Have a nice day.
Marvelous. Yes, indeed.
Well?
Oh, hello, Mrs. Chesters. Nice to see you.
Is this window open or not?
What? Oh, of course it is. Sorry.
I'd like to make a withdrawal.
Certainly. For how much?
There's the slip right in front of you. Can't you see?
Yes, I see it now. Mrs. Chesters, have you ever read David Copperfield?
How's that?
Wonderful book. Here's this poor little fellow whose father has passed on, and his mother has remarried a miserable man named Murdstone. Can you believe that name? And Murdstone has this sister, Jane, and...
Mr. Bemis, you shortchanged me again.
I did? Oh, my.
You owe me one more dollar. There's only 24 here. I should have 25.
Quite right. I'm truly sorry, Mrs. Chesters. I thought there were five ones. Here you are. Now then, There's another character in the book named Micawber, Mr. Micawber. He's always being taken off to debtor's prison.
You read too much.
There's a wonderful woman in it, too, named Peggotty. She's David's nurse, and...
This is a bank. If I wanted to know about books, I'd go to a library.
Well, you see, the library's hardly open anymore, so I'm afraid you'd find that you...
Mr. Bemis.
Yes, Mr. Carsbill.
I wonder if I might see you in my office now, Bemis.
The time is the day after tomorrow. The place is anywhere, so long as it can accommodate a bank, a main street, and a library, along with a myopic little man with Coke bottle glasses named Henry Bemis. The gentleman in question has only one passion in life, and that is to read. Mr. Henry Bemis, conspired against by browbeaters and henpeckers, and by clocks whose hands waggle disapprovingly and always disallow the moments he'd prefer to spend on his favorite pastime. Today, however, Mr. Bemis will finally have his chance to read anything and everything in a world much different from the one he knows now. A world without bank presidents, a world, for that matter, without anyone at all, located in a place called the Twilight Zone.
And now, The Twilight Zone and our story, Time Enough at Last, starring Tim Kazurinsky, with Stacy Keach as your narrator.
Did you hear what I said, Bemis?
Why, certainly, Mr. Carsville. I don't suppose you've ever read David Copperfield, have you?
No, Mr. Bemis, I have not. Now, if you'll be good enough to accompany me. Now, Bemis.
Yes, sir?
I shall come to the point of this interview. I shall arrive in the following manner. What constitutes an efficient member of this organization? Viz., a bank teller who knows his job and performs it, i.e., an organization man who functions within an organization.
An outstanding book.
What?
The Organization Man by William H. White. I read it a number of years ago.
Mr. Bemis, I'm attempting to point out that you do not function well within the organization. You are neither an efficient bank teller nor a proficient employee. Instead, Bemis, you are a reader.
So I am?
A reader of books, of magazines, periodicals, newspapers, pamphlets, brochures, catalogs, advertisements, tracts.
And chapbooks and broadsides and instruction manuals. Oh, all sorts of things. Whatever I can lay my hands on.
Ad infinitum. That's precisely my point. When you're waiting on customers, you have an open book in your lap. Don't deny it. When you're balancing the daily tally sheets, one eye is on a printed page. I see you going into the vault downstairs during your lunch hour, book in hand.
Well, sir, with all due respect, it was my understanding that when I'm off the clock, my time is my own, in a manner of speaking.
Indeed it is. A very important point. Do you know how I became the man I am, Bemis?
Let me see. No. No, I don't.
I was a teller once myself. Hard to believe, I know. A good teller, I'm proud to say. Became what I am today because I spent my lunch hour in the following manner. 5 minutes for a sandwich. 2 minutes, milk. 1 minute, cookie. Then, 52 minutes spent studying. And do you know what I studied, Bemis?
I can't say that I do.
Finance and banking.
Is that so? On your lunch hour? My, my.
I practiced adding up figures, subtracting, dividing, compounding interest, and, after 21 years, passing through the ranks, do you know how I wound up?
Well...
I wound up as president of the bank.
So you did.
Ultimatum, Mr. Bemis. You will henceforth devote your time to your job. And that means forget about reading, or you'll find yourself outdoors on a park bench reading from morning to night for want of a job. Do I make myself perfectly clear?
Oh, yes, quite.
Good.
It's just that...
Just that what, Bemis? Make it quick and then get back to your teller's cage.
It's, well, my wife.
What about your wife?
I think she's taken up yoga.
Now, see here.
She must have, or some similar form of self-denial. And now she expects me to live by the same philosophy.
What philosophy?
No bookcases, no magazines on the table, nothing at all. You see, she doesn't allow me to read at home.
Oh, of all the...
Nope, not on the premises. When I come home at night and pick up the evening paper, she yanks it out of my hand before I have a chance to open it. And then after dinner, when I try to look at a magazine, to relax, you understand, she's already hidden them away somewhere. It's gotten so bad that I find myself reading the labels on condiment bottles at the dinner table. Now she won't even let me use catsup.
Unasked, let me give you my reaction to all this.
Oh, please, please.
Your wife sounds like an amazingly bright woman.
Helen? Well, she is intelligent, but...
To see the problem and zero in on it like that.
Problem, you say?
Your compulsive reading. Your addiction to printed words in any form.
Do you really think it's an addiction?
What else would you call it? You've obviously been suffering from it for years, or you wouldn't need such powerful glasses.
Well, now that you mention it, I did read a lot as a boy. You know, I used to keep a flashlight under the covers so I could stay up late and finish a book. I remember...
And I remember last November. You spent the better part of your days reading campaign buttons on the lapels of customers. You'll recall, Mr. Bemis, one particular young woman who took considerable offense. She tried to hit you with an umbrella for staring at her chest.
I remember that too, Mr. Carsville. She never gave me a chance to explain. I only wanted to see who she was voting for.
Indeed. Good day, Mr. Bemis.
Good day, Mr. Carsville.
What are you doing now?
Oh, I was just reading the plaque on your wall. I see you graduated from...
Out!
Let's see now. Stocks down. More weapons testing.
Henry?
New bomb under development. An even bigger one. Now that's something to think about.
Henry?
Yes, dear. I'm in the living room.
Do you want more coffee or don't you?
No, thank you, dear.
Well, then tell me that, but don't sneak off so that you can bury yourself in newsprint.
Sorry. I was only checking the headlines.
I think we've gone over this quite enough, Henry. I won't countenance a husband of mine sacrificing the art of conversation to... All right, what's so funny?
Nothing, dear.
Go on, out with it.
Oh, it's just the way you worded that. A husband of yours. How many husbands have you had? I thought I was the only one.
I would appreciate your not rubbing it in.
Oh, Helen, it was a joke.
Go into the other room and change your shirt.
Now? Well, there's nothing wrong with this shirt. It's the same one I put on this morning. You ironed it yourself.
We're playing cards tonight. I want you to look fresh.
Cards?
That's right. Cards. We're going over to the Phillipses.
Oh, we are.
Well, Henry, any objections?
No, dear. I must have forgotten. What time are we due there?
In about 15 minutes. That's why I want you to change your shirt. Try to look at least remotely respectable.
I'll be ready, dear.
15 minutes, Henry.
Aha. Just enough time for a short read. Now, where did I hide it? Ah, in this drawer. That's right. Perhaps I can bring it along.
One more thing.
Yes, dear?
Henry?
I was just getting ready.
What have you got there?
Got?
Under your coat.
Why, nothing.
Oh, then what's this?
Ooh, that's odd. Wonder how that got in there.
I could only hazard a guess. A handbook of modern poetry. Yours, Henry?
Well, actually...
Would you like to read me some?
You mean aloud? From the book?
Don't you want to?
Why, Helen, I'd be delighted. This particular volume has some lovely things in it. Really, quite lovely. One or two from Edna St. Vincent Millay and Robert Frost. Let me see. Carl Sandburg, William Carlos Williams, Archibald MacLeish, Kenneth Patchen.
Go ahead.
I can't. Helen, look. Someone's made marks on every page with one of those thick black pens. Who could do such a thing?
Who do you think did it, Henry?
Well, you don't mean...
You should thank me. A grown man who reads silly, ridiculous doggerel?
It isn't doggerel. There were some beautiful poems in here.
I say it's doggerel. I also say it's a waste of time.
Helen, please. No, please don't tear the pages out. Oh.
Careful, Henry. You dropped your glasses. Just think, without them, you wouldn't be able to read any of this.
Watch out. You'll step on them.
I might, accidentally. And then where would you be? You couldn't see a thing. Of course, then you wouldn't be able to play cards, or go to work either. And we can't have that, can we, Henry?
Why, Helen? Why do you do such things for 20 years?
Because I married a fool.
There'll come a time, Helen. There'll come a moment when...
When what, Henry?
When you'll be paid back for such indignities and cruelties and miseries. You'll see.
Where are you going, Henry? To change your shirt?
I'm going to bed, Helen. There's one thing you didn't count on. I've learned these poems by heart. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say them to myself aloud and listen to the music of those beautiful words. Because you can't vandalize what's in my mind. You can't climb in there and scratch out and tear up and destroy such magnificent language. No one can.
Henry? Henry, I'm speaking to you!
$90, $95, $100. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Bemis.
Always a pleasure. Next.
I'd like to put this in my checking account.
Of course. If you'll kindly fill out a deposit slip.
Okay, I'll step aside.
Oh, take your time. There's no one else in line at the moment.
A constant remembrance that at a bank, like a political office and a public trust, blah, 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 something about a sense of loyalty and a devotion to duty. These are the things that make a bank great. They are of the essence, or some such. With them, an institution like ours will remain strong.
Everything all right in there, Cheryl?
I think so.
What's he up to?
Mr. Carsville? Well, he's dictating a speech for the bankers' meeting next Thursday. He wanted me to bring him the quarterly report.
Isn't that something?
Well, he needs to know the figures, deposits, and holdings.
Dictating, you say?
His secretary will type it up and correct it, fix the grammar.
Why?
Well, she always does that for him. It's her job.
But why can't he write it out himself? The speech, I mean. Is the English language that mysterious? Written English? It's really very simple. You gather your thoughts and put them down on paper. They're only words, after all. Words that begin as feelings and become thoughts and then are turned into sentences.
I never thought of it that way.
Do you see my point? It's the most basic process of the human mind, assuming one has at least an elementary vocabulary.
Maybe it's a matter of time. He must have a lot to do running the bank and all.
Time, yes, time. That I can understand completely. It's a matter of fitting it into your schedule. But if you want to, badly enough, you'll find a way. Take reading, for example. I wouldn't trade it for anything. A doorway, as it were, a privileged entry into another mind. A chance to see the world through someone else's eyes.
Here's my deposit slip.
Yes. Thank you, sir. And here's your receipt.
Okay, see you next week, Mr. Bemis.
Oh, I'm sure you will. I'll be here. Where else could I be?
It's almost time for lunch.
Is it? Already?
I was just wondering.
Yes?
Would you like to join us?
Pardon?
Well, some of us are going down the street to that new restaurant. They say it's really nice.
Is that what they say?
Why don't you come along? Unless you have something else to do.
Well, that's very kind of you, Cheryl. Very, very kind. But as a matter of fact, there is something I have to finish.
I understand.
Good, that's good. Because, you see, I love Joyce.
Oh, does she work near here?
Oh, heavens, no. That's funny, Cheryl. Really, very funny. I didn't know you had such a sense of humor. I mean, James Joyce.
I see.
Do you? James Joyce, the writer. Have you read Dubliners? It's the most marvelous book. One piece in particular, The Dead, is perhaps the finest story I've ever read. I'm rereading it now for the first time in years. Just a few pages to go. With any luck, I can finish it on my lunch break. The ending is quite moving, as I recall. Transcendent is the word I'm looking for. Yes, I'll be happy to loan it to you if you like. Oh, here we are. Peace and quiet at last. There just isn't any place quieter than the vault of a bank. All I have to do is pull the door closed and voila! My own private lunchroom and reading room. Now, let me see. What's for lunch today? Sandwich? Apple? Something to drink? What more does a man need? A jug of wine? A book of verse? Well, a thermos of coffee, at least. The morning paper and my book. Where was I? The scene at the Christmas party. A house in Dublin. It's snowing and... Oh, wait, better check the time. 12:17 by my watch. Exactly 43 minutes to finish The Dead. After a quick scan of the front page of the paper. New bomb would mean total destruction, says scientist. Oh, my. Here's hoping they never have to use it. What in the world? That sound. What is it? Something outside? A pocket watch. The crystal's broken. Whoa. Now the lights have gone off. Hello? Hello upstairs? Is everything all right? It's all smashed. Ruined. There's money everywhere. Wait, look at that.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Carsville?
A constant remembrance that at a bank, like a political office in a public trust.
Are you in here, sir?
What matters is a sense of loyalty and devotion to duty.
Mr. Carsville?
So in conclusion, etc., etc., that's my speech for the Thursday night banquet, Miss Jackson, with revisions. Would you type that up in triplicate for me? Type that up in triplicate for me. Type that up in triplicate. Type that up in triplicate for me.
That's only the dictation recorder. Mr. Carsville's phone. I don't suppose it still works. No dial tone. Nothing. Helen. Helen! The inside of the phone is burned to a crisp, as if it melted. What's happened here? Why, there's no longer any window or wall. Just a huge hole. Cheryl? Cheryl, my friend. You were my friend, weren't you? My only friend. And now you're gone, too. It's all gone. This block, the entire city, nothing but rubble, as far as the eye can see. It's a nightmare. That's all it is. I fell asleep downstairs, and I'm dreaming. I'll wake up any minute and have a good laugh. Any minute now. As if this were the last car, the last one on the street that hasn't burned. It's impossible. It isn't real. It can't be. It feels real enough. It certainly does. I wonder if it still runs. Can I get home? See if Helen's alive? Someone's left the key in the ignition. Now I know I'm dreaming. Come on. Come on. Oh, what's the use? There's nowhere to drive. The street's impossible. There's nothing but one enormous crater, it looks like, beyond the park. Hello? Hello? Is anybody there? Anybody at all? I can't be the only one left, can I? They're all dead. They must be. Everybody's dead. Except me. I'm all right. But why am I all right? I was right in the middle of... The vault. I was in the vault. The walls are 18 inches thick down there. That's why I'm alive.
because I was down inside the vault. The thing of it is, though, I'm not at all sure I want to be alive, to be totally alone. They did it. They actually did it. Some damn fool used the bomb after all. And now look. Look at what they've done. Somebody, anybody, please, help me. I am born. Whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my own life, or whether that station will be held by anybody else, these pages must show. To begin my life with the beginning of my life after the great conflagration. My name is Henry Bemis, and this is my journal. I'm not a writer, but someone must do this to leave a record for the future, if there is a future. So it falls on me to set down what I have seen. Day two, as far as I can tell, the city is without life. After sleeping through the night in an abandoned furniture store, I awoke and went in search of food. The markets in the area are fully stocked. The canned goods appear to be undamaged. Peaches. Always did like peaches. Good meal. Very good. Soup, beef stew, vegetables, and dessert. A well-rounded menu, if I do say so. Something from each of the food groups. Well, almost. That leaves approximately 900 cans in this market alone. At least I won't starve to death. It'll last for a few years. All the food one man can eat. And then some. Have to remember to carry a can opener. And now what? Go down the street to the Bijou Theater? See what's planned? Well, of course, they're dark today, no electricity. How about an after-dinner cigar? What a splendid idea. Is that a tobacco shop across the street? I was happy to find a newsstand on the corner. By some miracle, not all of it had burned or blown away. There was one copy of the New York Times. All the news that's fit to print. I realized then that there would never be another edition. Only the same headlines, the same editorials, even the same comics. But after I read it and reread it, I still have a few magazines. I decided to remember this place. For the time being, I thought I'd explore the neighborhood, because it was my neighborhood now, all of it. From this day forward, I'd have it to myself. There was a candy shop, a stationery store, a dry cleaners, sporting goods. For some reason, that one caught my eye. Besides, I had to sit down somewhere and rest. The worst thing was being alone. Utterly, completely alone. And this was the way it would always be from now on. Just walking and sitting eating and smoking and reading the same newspaper over and over again. But for now, I needed a flashlight and some candles or a lantern for tonight. There were tennis rackets, rods, and reels. I could always go fishing if there were any more fish. The gun department, never used a gun in my life, wouldn't know how to. I suppose I could learn for self-protection, but against whom? Or target practice, that might fill some time. I had my pick, Remington, Winchester, Marlin, or a pistol. Yes, why not? A revolver like a cowboy in a Zane Grey novel. It felt strangely heavy but balanced, as if it belonged in my hand. Without thinking, I began to load it. And then something came over me, settling on my shoulders like a great weight. The sadness of it all, the pity, the loneliness, and the sheer, utter waste. I thought, what does it matter now? What does it matter? Who will know? Who will care? It doesn't matter one bit. So I raised the gun and looked at it. How well made it was, finely machined, polished to a bright silver shine, and so carefully balanced the way it rested in my hand. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make a bit of difference. This is perfectly all right. I mean, this is solitude. I should be grateful. I've never had much of that. I've got things to occupy my time. I've got enough food. I'm really extremely fortunate. If it weren't for the loneliness, the sameness, if there were just something else, someone, I'm sure I could be forgiven for this, the way things are now. I put it to my head and cocked the hammer. If there is a God, surely I'll be forgiven. And then I saw it. Wait, what's that? I could see the entire next block through the hole in the wall. And there it was. I adjusted my glasses and read the sign from here. Public Library! Yes! Oh, yes! I forgot all about it! But you're still here, aren't you? My greatest friend! You who have never failed me! Not burned! Not burned at all! Why, the whole interior is untouched! There are thousands of books here! Tens of thousands! All waiting to be read! Collected works of Shakespeare, complete works of Dickens, collected plays of George Bernard Shaw, poems of Browning, Shelley, Keats, great dramas of the world, books, all the books I need, all the books I want, or have ever wanted. Poetry, fiction, history, it's all here. And now my journal ends, because I have things to do. It doesn't matter whether I write it down or not. All I have thought and felt has already been said by the great writers, the poets, and philosophers, the historians of times past. I know that nothing is new, nothing is ever lost, so long as there are books. In the midst of this catastrophe, I have been reborn. Now, this pile is January, and that one over there, February, March, April, May, this year, next year, the year after that, without end. I think I'll begin with biographies, then short story collections, and move into the great novels. I'll vary them by subject matter. Science fiction in the spring, Wells and Asimov, Bradbury and Clark, Sturgeon and Le Guin, and Philip K. Dick. Then, for the heat of summer, Tolstoy and his Russian winter, and Dostoevsky and Chekhov, Gorky and Pasternak, and then, in the fall, mysteries. Mr. Hammett and Mr. Chandler, John D. MacDonald and Russ MacDonald, and all those hard-boiled fellows. And when winter sets in, some whodunits for the long nights. Agatha Christie and Patricia Highsmith and Sue Grafton. And the best part, the very best part, is that there's time now. There's all the time I need, all the time I want. There's time enough at last. Where to start? What a foolish concern. I believe it was Charles Fort who said, when measuring a circle, begin anywhere. I feel like a kid in a candy store. So many wonders laid out before me, all of them indescribably delicious. My glasses! Where? They're broken. Completely shattered. I'll never be able to put them together again. It isn't fair. It isn't fair at all. There was time now. There was finally time. Plenty of time. All the time in the world. It isn't fair. It isn't fair. No, it isn't fair.
The Best Laid Plans of Mice and Men, and Mr. Bemis. The small man in the thick glasses, who asked very little of life, who wanted nothing but time to read. Only a moment out of an eon of moments, a mere instant out of eternity. For himself. Henry Bemis, now just part of the landscape, smashed beyond all recognition. Just another piece of rubble, a fragment of what man has deeded to himself. In the Twilight Zone.
More from the Twilight Zone after this.
You are about to enter another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land of imagination. Next stop, the Twilight Zone. Hi, this is Stacy Keach. I'd like to take a moment to tell you about our Twilight Zone website at twilightzoneradio.com. At twilightzoneradio.com, you'll find the latest information on these Twilight Zone radio dramas, including behind-the-scenes photographs, plus the newest product releases, trivia contests, ways to contact us, other Twilight Zone-related info and merchandise, plus links to other fascinating websites. So make your next stop twilightzoneradio.com.
Visit twilightzoneradio.com to purchase these Twilight Zone radio dramas on cassette and CD, or call toll-free 1-866-989-ZONE. That's 1-866-989-9663.
Time Enough at Last, starring Tim Kazurinsky with Stacy Keach as your narrator, was adapted for radio by Dennis Etchison and based on a script by Rod Serling from a story by Lynn Venable. Heard in the cast were Meg Falcon, Christian Stolte, Deb Dotzer, Carl Amari, Vince Amari, and Vince Gerasoli. To learn more about the Twilight Zone radio dramas and to obtain audio cassettes and CDs of these programs, visit our website at twilightzoneradio.com. The producers of The Twilight Zone wish to thank CBS Enterprises, Carol Serling, Dennis Etchison, Dick Brescia Associates, Claire Simon Casting, Terry Jennings, XM Satellite Radio, Sirius Satellite Radio, our sponsors and our radio affiliates for helping make this series possible. This copyrighted radio series is produced and directed by Carl Amari and Roger Wolski for Falcon Picture Group. Doug James speaking.